It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Wonderful to be here with you. I hope you're having a phenomenal Thursday. We're going to make it go by very, very quickly this afternoon. It's going to be well worth your time. Lots of stuff coming down the pipeline, including but not limited to. We got Brett Jensen coming up here shortly. We're going to talk about a couple of big stories he's been chasing. I've got quite a CRT festival for you to be a part of. You really are going to want to be around for all of this. So many times I get asked this question. I know it's common to a lot of conservative hosts and folks that are concerned about the explosion of, you know, all the radicalism that's in our lives. I get asked this question all the time. Oh, when are they going to fight back? Well, when are we going to fight back? When's that going to happen? Nobody ever stands up. Oh, no, ladies and gentlemen. They are standing up. And it ties back to the conversation I was sharing with you about the teacher there, Gabriel Gipe, out in California, who was a self-described Antifa teacher. We've got a lot of updates on a lot of stories. Plus your phone call, 704-570-1110 on Twitter, at Winterbull Show. We head on out now to our very good friend, Breaking Brett Jensen. Brett Jensen, it's so good to have you here. How are you, my friend?
Just fine, sir. Just fine.
So here I am, minding my business, and a little birdie tells me that you got some very interesting stories that you've been working on. One of the things that you've been all over for the better part of a week is the saga involving CMS schools and firearms. We just watched that tragedy unfold there in Forsyth County, right in Winston-Salem overnight, and now we are getting reports of more and more seizures of weapons. What's going on here in Charlotte?
Yeah, the police confirmed it for me yesterday, but I had waited to get the official police report. So we knew that, you know, last week CMPD had a big press conference about, hey, the first 3 days of school, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we had, you know, four guns, one knife, and a BB gun that looked like a Glock, modeled after a Glock, taken from CMS schools during the first 3 days. And we had another one on Tuesday. This time it was a girl who had gotten into a fight. This time it was a girl with a .38 revolver and ammo.
Whoa!
Inside of West Charlotte High School. Like, wow. not in her car. Like, a lot of those other guns were, like, found in cars and stuff like that. This was actually on her person, to quote the police report.
Wow. So was this some sort of a beef, you know, somebody's bullying somebody or somebody's got a problem with somebody? Or did this appear to be something more of a random type event that might have been happening?
You know, they said it was a large group of students that were getting into the fight. Like, it was several students. So I don't have what was the root cause of it. Like, I don't know if it was gang. I don't know if it was over a boyfriend. I don't know. But it was several students involved in a fight. And then so the police showed up at 9:30 in the morning is when they found the .38 revolver and ammo.
Can you imagine getting that phone call as a parent? You're sitting there at your job, sipping a cup of coffee, and all of a sudden they go, hey, you got to come pick up your kid. They had a .38 with ammo with them at the, in homeroom.
I mean, well, it'd be like, crazy. You got to come pick up your kid at the county jail.
Yeah.
Because Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. You know, Rob Tufano, our mutual good friend, has often said on these airwaves, you wouldn't believe how much violence that takes place in the streets actually originates in the social media on Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat and MySpace and Vimeo and all the platforms.
Yeah, I totally believe it. I mean, that's...
People start woofing.
Kids today, that's literally all they care about is the social media aspect of everything.
Yeah, it really is. Have updated...
How many likes, how many looks, how many whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's literally their lives are centered around that.
Yeah. I miss the innocent days of diss tracks. What's going on with the world of COVID? COVID seems to be back front and center in so many parts of the country. We've got numbers here locally. What's going on with that, Brett Jensen?
Well, it's in a rarity. I don't know. I think they're doing it just because of what's going on. We're heading into Labor Day weekend. This hasn't happened. Like, it's extremely rare for Novant and Atrium to get together and they've held a couple of joint press conferences, mm-hmm. and they put out release, you know, statements together, which is extremely unusual. It would be like the Yankees and the Red Sox putting out a statement together.
Nice analogy.
But not only did those two have a press conference today, but they also included Caremont, which is the big medical system in Gaston County. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and they're also in the process of building a new hospital in Belmont. And so, with Caremont. So they had these three people, executives, you know, doctors and whatnot from those three hospitals hold a press conference today. And basically, I mean, to summarize, I'm gonna break it down really, really quick for you.
Sure.
The summary of the press conference was, we're short-staffed, please get a shot. That was basically it.
Holy cow.
And everything revolved around, we are short-staffed, we're in, you know, please get a shot. And they put out the data, you know, of 196 people, or, you know, and 100 in, I think it's 124 on life support on ventilators. And it says in the Charlotte area. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. And
what does that mean?
I know how Atrium does things. And so I was like, well, wait a minute. Does that include Union County, Cleveland County, where Shelby is? Does that include Lincoln County, Cabarrus County, all these other surrounding counties? And then they said, yes, it actually does. So it's a lot of different hospitals in the Charlotte area. It wasn't just Mecklenburg County and Gaston County. It also included Union, like I said, and Lincoln and Cabarrus and Rowan and, you know, the others as well. So it was like all the collection of hospitals. But it was but seriously, the majority, like almost the entire get together was centered around, get a shot, we're short staffed.
And they've
been short staffed for about a year now, and I love giving Novant credit when credit is due, and Novant has been brutally honest and upfront about that from the day one, going, hey, we're short-staffed and we're trying to use traveling nurses, because it's not the doctors, it's the nurses where they're short-staffed, and that's where they're like, hey,
but they're looking at firing nurses who don't take the shot.
Well, they talked a little bit about that, and Katie Peralta did ask that today about that. Said, hey, how many people have you had quit?
Did she have a mask?
Because they won't get the shot. And Novant, I believe, was the only one to answer and said, well, we've had a couple, but not a lot.
Yeah.
You know, not a lot. And they, I think they said, you know, it was a pretty high percentage that had at least one shot. Maybe 85%, I'm just trying to remember this off the top of my head. But
yeah.
They said it was a very high percentage that had at least one shot, and that people have retired or resigned or quit, and very few of them had actually anything to do with the refusal of getting the shot.
Wow. All right. Good to know.
Just for the listeners real quick.
Yes,
the tomorrow afternoon, Gibby Harris and them will be holding another press conference, you know, just like they always do before they head into the holidays. And I would suspect they're just going to say, look, if you haven't been vaccinated, just stay at home. Don't go on the road. Don't do a road trip anywhere. Pretty much like, you know, what they've always done when it comes to the holidays.
Yeah. Okay. We'll be watching that closely. I appreciate you, Brett Jensen. It's always good to catch up, my friend.
Thanks a lot, Brett. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it. That's Brett Jensen. I'm Brett Witterbull. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Witterbull Show. Our number 704-570-1110. So I hear all this stuff all the time from people who are worried that, we're losing this thing. What are we going to do? How are we going to handle this? What's going on? How are we going to get through this? So you'll remember a couple of days ago, I shared with you the story that was just dropping out of Project Veritas. It's now been circulated a lot more widely about a man named Gabriel Guype. He's a teacher at the Natomas Unified School District, which is just a fancy way of saying Sacramento, California. And he teaches at a high school called Indercom High School. He was stung by Project Veritas because they knew this guy was an Antifa, pro-Soviet type leftist. And what Project Veritas does is they are able to, you know, infiltrate these different people and organizations and ask him questions. And they just basically ask the guy, hey, so what's your story? What are you about? What's going on? And I want to give you a little sample of some of what he was talking about with Project Veritas. This is going to apply beautifully to CRT, okay? So this is Gabriel Guype, Cut 31, talking about being a pro-Antifa teacher.
Over 180 days, turn them into revolutionaries.
How do you do that? How do you
scare them out of them? Sacramento organization that is under the banner of Antifa is very loosely organized, right? So that, yeah, when there is like right-wing rallies and stuff, then we like will create an opposition to that. Yeah.
Where would he go to connect to some of these organizations?
I post a calendar every week.
Awesome.
And then so like and I do it for extra credit. So they get points for doing it. Like and so that encourages them to do it. And I've had like students show up for like protests, community events, you know, tabling, food distribution, also all sorts of things. When they go, they take pictures, they write up a reflection, that's their extra credit. Like I have an Antifa flag on my wall. And a student complained about that and he said it made him feel uncomfortable. Well, this is meant to make fascists feel uncomfortable, so if you feel uncomfortable, I don't really know what to tell you. Like, maybe you shouldn't be aligning with the values that this is antithetical to. So, the Cultural Revolution in the 60s was fixing the problem that came about after the economic crisis. It ultimately failed, right? There was a lot of excesses. People were definitely, like, you know, shot in the streets that probably shouldn't have been.
Incredibly ugly behavior come out of this city. And you can see a couple of people over there that might be demonstrating that.
I have 180 days to turn them into revolutionaries.
He has 180 days to turn them into revolutionaries. He brings these kids in. He's a government teacher at the high school. He brings the kids in. He tells the kids that he wants them to become socially involved, politically involved. He gives them extra credit to go out and to participate in what's essentially predominantly, overwhelmingly left-wing political things. There's a problem with this, okay? He is prohibited by his employment contract, as is everybody in this district, from politicking, encouraging a specific point of view as it relates to politics, soliciting, telling kids that they have to do a certain sort of political project, all that kind of stuff that you would expect. He's prohibited from doing that under his contract. So he says, I got 180 days to turn them into radicals. That's what I do. I send them out to these different events. I have an Antifa flag in my room. Kid said to me he was offended by the Antifa flag, and as a result, I told him, well, you've got a problem. That's your problem. That's what's happening. Well, the word got out. The word got out around not just Sacramento, but around the entire world. And this is a guy who's proud of what he believes. I mean, he stands by what he believes. He stands by what he believes. Let me say that again, okay? He stands by what he believes. And he says, nakedly, he says, here, this is cut, TJ, we'll do cut 44. This is one of the projects he does in his classroom with the kids. Go.
They take an ideology quiz in their unit 4, and I put their face, they have to give me a picture of themselves, and I put it on the wall where they are. Every year, they get further and further left. And I've made them pay attention to where my tack marks are, because I'm like, these ideologies are considered extremes, right? Extreme times breed extreme ideologies, right? There is a reason why Generation Z, these kids, are becoming further and further left.
So he gives them a test, like a personality test. He scores them on that test, and then they have a timeline on the wall, you know, across the chalkboard or across the bulletin board. And he makes each of them give him a picture of themselves, and he tacks them up on the spectrum to the left. And he tracks them. This guy is a groomer, and he's in huge trouble. But we're just getting started. When you hear what happened next, it's going to give you hope. News Talk, 1110 and 99.3 WBT, Brett Witterbull Show. So we were talking about this curious case of Gabriel Guype, who is a teacher out in Sacramento, California, who is very, very famous now because he's been caught on tape through Project Veritas's efforts. He's been caught on tape bragging about how it is that he spends 180 days out of the school year indoctrinating his kids to become radicals. And this is the sort of thing that many people are concerned about, especially as it relates to CRT, because it's not that you're talking about different political concepts, you're learning things like that. It's the fact that these are people who aren't attempting to educate these kids. What they're trying to do is indoctrinate these kids, which is not what you send your kid to school for, typically as a rule. So Gabriel Guype is now very famous, and now he's very panicked. Because the school board and the authorities there in Natomas, in the Natomas School District in Sacramento, which is the capital of California, has Gavin Newsom's stomping grounds. They're looking into this, and now he's worried. Now he's worried that he's going to get fired for all that's gone on here. This is Cut 32, DJ. This is Gabriel Geip talking about how worried he is that he's now going to lose his job as a teacher at this school. Go.
I say thank you to every past student and colleague and friend who's reaching out right now in support of what is happening. My personal safety and security is obviously my top concern at this moment, but also, like, they are coming for my job and what I love doing in the classroom, and they are going to run this campaign and get public pressure behind them, and it is very likely that the district will cave in regards to this, and I'm hopeful that they don't, and all support at this moment is greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Now, suddenly, wait, he was all laughing and a wise guy talking about how he indoctrinates these kids. Now, all of a sudden, he gets a near-firing experience. He's likely going to be dismissed from the job there at his school for doing it. But really, what he's going to get in trouble for, let's be honest, is he's bragging about doing it. He's bragging about doing it on tape. And he doesn't care. He's like, I'm part of Antifa. I don't care. I got a flag. I wear a shirt. I got a Soviet hammer and sickle tattoo on my body. Hey, all those things are great if you want to have them in your apartment, if you want to have it on your body, you want to do your thing. But if you're a government teacher, what are you teaching your kids? Like, what are you supposed to be teaching the kids? You're supposed to be teaching the kids a lot of stuff, but it's not what you think. See, there was a meeting in the last 24 hours. There was a school board meeting, and parents showed up. And something that has been amazing to me since I've started watching politics in the post-Trump era, watching acutely, right? Once Trump comes into the political scene in 2015 and you watch the way stuff moves, women are more mobilized and energized than any time I can recall in my life. And as Sarah Palin was once roasted for being a mama bear, the mama bears are not happy with what this character has been teaching their kids. Let me give you just an example, and I'll give you a couple more here after we get a traffic update. Let me go first to one of the parents who showed up at this hearing, at this meeting, to express how disgusted they were with the situation. This is Cut 42. This is a mom in that school district that doesn't like what Gabriel Geip is teaching.
He took an English class, and there was subtle indoctrination in the curricula. It is not just in the government classes that this toxicity and poison is occurring. It is in English classes. It is in art classes. We tried to address it through the proper chain of command, only to be told it would be taken care of. And here I am tonight, and he's graduated. I was born in Venezuela, and while I have been here in the United States for many years, my family, my father's side, is still there. So what I hear is second and third hand information. I do not want this place and this educational system to become Venezuela. Yeah.
They're just getting fired up at that meeting. And the people at the school board look like they would rather be anywhere else in the whole world than in that room facing a bunch of moms and dads who are disgusted and fed up with what's being pushed into the brains of their kids. And it's not just the ideological indoctrination. It's the fact that it's being done in a concealed fashion. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. All right, closing out this conversation on Mr. Antifa teacher, who is now getting major blowback and is likely to be removed from his teaching position out there in Sacramento. I wanted you to hear what a couple of other parents had to say about this, because this is the key to fighting back if you don't want to see CRT rolled out in your school and concealed from you as a parent. As a parent, you have a right to know what your kids are learning. I mean, it's really that simple. You have a right to know what your kids are learning. And there's an impact on kids from these teachers that many of us will overlook. We just won't think about it in the same sort of way. When teachers tell your kids something, they're speaking from a position of authority. I know we're all inclined to think that it's a bunch of laughing and goofing and pointing at the teacher, be like, oh, we don't take you seriously. No. When it comes to politics, when it comes to culture, when it comes to these conversations, these teachers are speaking, and I'm talking about the ideologically driven ones, are speaking, as I said, as groomers. They're trying to groom these kids to believe what those teachers believe. Most teachers don't want to teach this stuff. Most teachers want to teach the fundamentals. They're passionate about their subject, English. They're passionate about social studies, history, government. They're passionate about economics. They're passionate about the sciences, the mathematics. But there's a group of people who are too lazy to go get jobs in the real world who decide they want to become activists and they want to warp the minds of young people. They don't want to teach. They want to mold them to believe what they believe, because people, once upon a time, molded their minds to believe what they currently believe and now want to give to the kids. So listen to this teacher, this parent. It's about 2 minutes long, and it is epic. It is epic. I had to edit out a word. There's an edit in there, so you will hear the edit, because she really gets emotional. This is a parent who speaks up. Cut 40, please. Go.
My job as her parent is to protect her from anybody that has ill will towards her. So being that this is her first year at this high school that is world renowned and everybody knows about this school, it's so perfect and everybody does everything right. The first time my daughter tells me and she goes against my wishes to come out of a classroom that's disruptive to her well-being, I have an issue. Yes. I am very articulate. My children are very well-read. They speak their opinion. They make sure that they are clear in what they do and do not like. And for the fact that my 17-year-old daughter had to come to me and said, Mom, you don't understand. He's let me explain. This means that in 2 weeks, in 13 days, he was allowed to change my daughter's mind about some fascist crap that y'all have let in this school. I'm from Texas. So this don't go on in Texas. This does not go on in Texas. There are 2 grades higher than California, period. So to think that my very sound-minded daughter would go against me and my wishes and our values and our home to be able to go and support this man, and he is putting her in harm's way. What the hell are y'all doing? Tired. How long does it have to go on before somebody says something?
Yes.
How long? How long? What are you going to do? That's the question. Get him out of here. We don't care about this boy. He got to go.
See? You get between a mama bear and a baby bear. You get into a family like that and you try to sow derision, you're going to have this sort of a concern. She's speaking specifically about that teacher that has 180 days to turn the kids into communists, basically, right? He's got 180 days to turn them, to flip them. The communist revolution in China. In China, they didn't get it right the first time, but we're going to get it right the second time. You have this woman who speaks up with her family in Venezuela. And then you have this, which I think represents the fear that most people have. I think this is the fear that most people have in this regard. And it's a person who's worried that there's going to be blowback against their kid. This is cut 41. This is one of the parents last night.
It's not your position. It's not your position to tell your opinions or your thoughts. You can be caring without telling your opinions and your thoughts. But what really upset me was a history class that was going into current events when it should have been world history. Why aren't you teaching about communism? Teaching about things that our kids need to know and what is going on there? So I ask the question. I tell my kids, you know what? I need to bring this up. They're scared that they're going to get a failing grade for a parent sticking up because it's happened before.
Retribution. Okay, so now you don't want to go along? We're going to punish you. You're going to be punished. But this isn't the only sort of stuff that's going on here. There is a teacher. I'm going to go cut number 43 next. There is a teacher that teaches out in Orange County, California. Her name is Kristen Pitson. She had her student pledge allegiance to the pride flag because she doesn't have an American flag in her classroom.
During third period, we have announcements and they do the Pledge of Allegiance. I always tell my class, stand if you feel like it, don't stand if you feel like it, say the words if you want, don't have to say the words. So my class decided to stand but not say the words. Totally fine. Except for the fact that my room does not have a flag. It used to be there, but I took it down during COVID because it made me uncomfortable.
Made her uncomfortable.
And I packed it away, and I don't know where, and I haven't found it yet.
She shakes her head and says, no, I know where.
But my kid today goes, hey, it's kind of weird that we just stand, and then, you know, we say it to nothing. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, I got to find it. Like, I'm working on it. I got you. In the meantime, I tell this kid, we do have a flag in the class that you can pledge your allegiance to. And he like looks around and he goes, oh, that one?
It's the pride flag. It's the pride flag. And so she said, she tells the kid, okay, you could say the Pledge of Allegiance to the pride flag. So, I mean, this is two examples. The reason why the reason why you heard dropouts in that clip is that's from a TikTok video she posted herself out there, and in the pauses she's making faces and shaking her head and doing things like that. I didn't edit anything out of that video. But this is the sort of indoctrination that's going on. And when people tell you, don't worry about it, it's CRT, it's nothing, it's just a different kind of way of looking at life, it's 1619, don't worry about it, everything is cool. They don't want you to know what's in the content of this stuff. And if you raise an eyebrow or you complain, your kids are going to face retribution. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Great to be here with you. Hour number two underway. Coach is on vacation this week, so he will not be joining us. But I will be joining us, and certainly inviting you to join us as well at 704-570-1110. As always, everything from across the news cycle of the day is fair game. We talk about it all. We're covering it all. Let me jump out on the phones because we've got people that want to react and respond to what it was that was said at this Board of Ed meeting that took place last night there in California, and want to react as well to this teacher who's been saying things. Indoctrinating the kids in the classroom by his own admission, and we certainly want to hear from folks. So let's start with Joe first up. Hello, Joe. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. Nice talking to you. I appreciate you taking my call.
Nice to speak with you.
And I also appreciate you bringing up this subject. This teacher and the other teacher, mm-hmm. I saw a little of it online myself. On Facebook, but my question is, what did he teach, or what was he supposed to be teaching?
Government.
He was supposed to be, okay, because yeah. I'm obviously, and so, all right, that helps me a lot. And something that might want to be mentioned later.
Sure.
We have a viper's nest of these people that teach in the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. I mean, that organization, I have followed it for many, actually several decades now, and it was originally built mm-hmm. to teach teachers mm-hmm. so that they could basically, you know, teach in North Carolina schools.
Right.
And they have turned into, you know, as leftist as you know, I think in some cases they try to get left of, and Duke also, for that matter, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. try to get left of dadgum Harvard and Yale.
Well, that's a huge dive to go that far left. But I appreciate the call, Joe, and you being out there, and it helps me move into this next sort of phase of this conversation. And that's this: if you're in college, you're, by and large, you're an adult. You're 17, 18 years old. You're embarking on your journey in the world. So if you are an adult or right on the verge of adulthood, you know, you can process a lot of things. There is a big difference between an 18-year-old freshman or even a 17-year-old freshman and a 13, 14-year-old freshman in high school. You know, a freshman in college. Oh, wait, what's the word? First year. A first year, that's right, because we found out from Florida International University you can't say freshman anymore because that's misogynistic. So there's a difference. You go to college, you're exposed to ideas. I'm assuming you can kind of process through them, figure out what it is. When you're in a high school, you don't have the freedom you have in college. In college, if you don't like the way the professor's teaching the class, you could drop the class. You just drop it. You just go into the registrar and say, I don't want to take the class. I'm dropping it. They'll either give you a refund or not, depending on how far along you are into this. High school, you got to take these classes. So you're compelled to be there. You got to sit there and listen. And you got to play ball. You have to play ball. Yeah, I sat in college classes. I didn't care what the other students thought in terms of politics. I didn't really care what the professors were talking about in terms of politics. They were all pretty much liberal. It didn't faze me. It made me more conservative, frankly. I'm more of a free market guy than what these folks were buying into. But I was an adult, and I was paying for my education. A public school, you don't have that freedom, and you don't have that liberty. And what's so instructive to me about that call, about that second woman that I played, the one who spoke for about 2 minutes, saying she was originally from Texas, was how quickly this guy was able to sort of seduce that class and to say, essentially, I'm right. And she goes home and tells the mom, no, this teacher's right. Don't blow him up. He's a good guy. He knows what he's talking about. And she says, that's 13 days. That's 13 days that this guy has sucked her in terms of these things. And I think it's absolutely incredible when you look at this sort of stuff. And this is happening everywhere. It's happening everywhere to a certain degree, to a varying degree, not a certain degree, but to a varying degree. This is occurring every place. Why? Why is this happening? I said this a couple of days ago. You have a divide in this country. It's not just Republican, Democrat, or liberal, conservative. It's not that. It's a divide in orientation. All right. You are either somebody who is going to be raised and indoctrinated and inculcated to believe that systems are sacrosanct, right? The justice system, the school system, the government system. You and I both know, if you've read the Constitution, that the Supreme Court is supposed to operate as a referee. But what we've had occur since the 1930s is a reorientation of thinking to believe that the Supreme Court is the final word on things. You're seeing it play out right now on the cable channels because Texas passes a bill. The Supreme Court doesn't pick that bill up. Now, all of a sudden, we have to blow up the Supreme Court and extend it and expand it and do all these sorts of things, which is fine, except the Congress and the Senate are the people who have to do that. The Senate and the House have the final say. The legislative branch has the final say in that regard. It's not the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is not supreme over the branches of government. It's the highest court in the land, but it's a court. So, for example, if, let's say, the Supreme Court decided we're outlawing guns completely, we're banning guns, the Congress and the Senate can come back and enshrine as an amendment. Oh, wait, we already have that in the second. But they can come back and they can pass a law. They can pass an amendment. It can go to the president. It can be ratified. It can be, and all that overrides the Supreme Court. But because of the orientation of the politicking of the last 85, 90 years, we have been told the Supreme Court is supreme, and when the Supreme Court says it's this, it's this. It's not. It's actually not. The states are a vital part of this because of the 10th Amendment. All of that's important, and you're not going to learn that in a government class run by an Antifa activist that likes to go out and beat people up on the weekends or try to, you know, reprogram kids' minds for an hour a day. You're not going to hear that from him because he's busy trying to sell people on Marxism. By his own admission, Chinese communists got a little out of control with the shooting of the people. We could do it better. That's not what I'm paying tax dollars to have my kid learn. If he wants to go learn that, he can go join the Communist Party when he's 18.
It's going to be goofy for doing it, but that's on him. J. Edgar Hoover's going to be spying on him.
News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, Brett Winterbull Show. We'll get into masking and a couple other things straight ahead. First, let me take Dean. Hello, Dean. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
I just, about this, I understand what the mothers were saying and everything, but I don't see how it gets resolved because, it, you know, she's talking about the content, but isn't it, and maybe you can help me out, isn't it sort of the system? Because no matter what, if you send your kids to school,
right,
they're in the hands of that teacher no matter what. And that's just the way it's structured.
Yeah. Well, it looks like this teacher is going to be on his way out because he violated his contract by basically proselytizing his politics on the kids, which is prohibited.
Well, does that mean the system works?
It would mean that the contract violation is going to be the enforcement mechanism so that you would not have an end around with the unions. But I think the system is broken if you've got teachers still kind of doing this sort of stuff in classrooms. Yeah.
But I just think that, how are you going to stop that then?
Easy. Don't send your kids to public school.
Well, there's always the option, or there's this thing of speaking up like these parents did and everything.
Right.
I think it's getting to be a very difficult time. In the old days, the most you had to sit down and talk to your kid about was, you got to wear a button-down shirt instead of a
regular good
point.
Shirt. That's a very good point. But let's take the politics out of it for a quick second, okay?
Okay.
Let's say your kid comes home and is telling you 2 times 2 is 3. And you say, well, no, that's not right. 2 times 2 is 4. And they say, well, no, the teacher says 2 times 2 is 3. How would one go about resolving that if you've got a situation where something that's verifiably provable, right, mathematics, is purposely being taught in incorrect fashion? How would that be remedied?
Well, our society has made it very difficult because it's, the family has taken a very low position.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The taxpayer and the family are regarded as an impediment to the systems, and that's the problem. That's the problem. We are not any longer respected for either our standing or for our role in society as a taxpayer. And that's a big problem right there. So great stuff, though. I appreciate you being out there, Dean. It's good to good to speak with you. Oh, there's a fair question right here. Brian, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Man, that was some idiotic stuff that you just said.
Okay, why was that idiotic?
Because you're going to tell this guy that he was like, what's the solution? And you tell this guy, mm-hmm, don't send your kids to public school. Where are these poor white kids going to go?
I don't know. You're going to have to find a better remedy.
How are they going to be educated if they don't go to the public schools?
Like I said, you're going to have to find a better remedy. You move out of the area. You go to a school system that's not doing this sort of stuff. There are a lot of
white kids. These are poor white kids. They can't move out of their situation where they are.
Sure they could.
How?
This is a high-end district that I'm using as an example. But people are free to move and to go any place they want. What do you mean you're locked down into a place? What's keeping somebody locked down into a place? That's absolute foolishness, Brian. And I disagree with you profoundly. And I'll tell you what, if you wanna make a solid point, I'll give you a solid point. Here's what you say. What's your remedy to get these kids into private school? Easy. Vouchers. Starve the beast. Let these kids go to private schools.
Okay, that's your solution, vouchers?
Absolutely. I say vouchers. I say open up charter schools. Absolutely. You don't want people getting a bad education. Absolutely.
They've been trying to pass that for years.
Well, then you got to keep doing it, don't you? You got to keep doing it. You got to keep at it.
Okay, but one other thing you're lying about is the CRT.
No, the CRT is absolutely present in many of our schools, yes. Did he hang up?
CRT was something about the pride flag. That has nothing to do with CRT.
No, it absolutely does. If you go over to the Audrey Kell and you look at the... it absolutely does. It's all been folded in. Social justice homeroom.
Listen, critical race theory has nothing to do with homosexuality.
No. See, you're being... No. Excuse me, sir. Excuse me. You are not being inclusive. You are not being inclusive, sir.
Listen, that's what the pride flag
is. You are... The pride flag is inclusive. The pride flag, the progressive pride flag is inclusive.
in the critical race theory? Are you serious? Is that really what you say?
The reality is, this is about inclusion. Social Justice Homeroom at Audrey Kell covers the full panoply of identities. No identity is more valuable than any other identity. Have you not heard of intersectionality, my friend? Intersectionality.
Listen, critical race theory.
Yes, you're correct. That's what it's called. That's what it's called. Okay.
But you're colluding it with the...
No, I'm not colluding it.
Homosexuality.
No. Sir. I am granting your point. Critical race theory is critical race theory. The implementation of it covers a wide variety of intersectionality that is present. Anybody who watches this understands this covers identity, gender, cisgender, you name it. There are a number of topics that are covered under this. Now, if you want pure critical race theory, you're going to have to go out and lobby for pure critical race theory. But what's happening is all this is being included.
No, it's not.
Oh, what school are you teaching critical race theory at?
I'm sorry?
What school are you teaching critical race theory at?
I'm researching it. I'm not teaching it.
Well, no. Look up intersectionality.
That's why I know.
Now who's being naive? Now who's being dismissive and naive? Why would you be alienating allies?
Allies?
You are alienating allies in this endeavor to bring about equality. Why are you alienating allies, sir?
Who's the ally?
Are you kidding me? I just told you intersectionality is a subcomponent of this. You need to embrace your allies. Why am I the one who has to explain? You know what? I got a good mind, Brian, to just shut this down today and go and apply to teach at one of these schools and show you how it's done.
Please do not do that.
I'm on my way. You know what? You've made my mind up for me, Brian. I'm on my way. Honey, we're changing it up. Get me my books. 704-570-1100. I hate to be that man, but I'm a man who will change his mind. Ryan, you have so dissuaded me from the pursuit of a talk radio dream that I've already achieved because I've sat in for Rush Limbaugh, that I have decided that I need to get out there and show people how... I'm not joking around when I say intersectionality is a huge part of this. I mean, this is an incredible thing. What are we doing? Why would you deny allies? And I'm Brett Witterbull, in for Brett Witterbull today. It is good to be here. I'm not really going to go and become a CRT teacher. Let me unpack a little bit of what that conversation was that I just had with a prior caller. I understand that CRT is sold as critical race theory. You are told that it's critical race theory. It's about racial justice and that sort of stuff. But what I'm telling you, folks, and I'm being honest because it happened here at Audrey Kell with the principal, Jamie Brooks. It's what Brett Jensen's reporting was about. He's got 200 plus slides. We've seen them. I've looked at every one of them. I've seen the entire curriculum. What they're doing is they're taking what used to be called CRT and they're calling it Social Justice Homeroom, or they're calling it a number of other topics. This is what this is about. This is about working in every possible sort of group underneath that umbrella, because what you're trying to do is get to an end goal. And the end goal is to get to people who are much more radical in their politics. And I'm not condemning people for wanting to be radicals. It's your right as an American. It's your right as a person to believe whatever you want to believe. But I think it's an unfair fight when you come in from a position of authority and you can indoctrinate kids to believe certain ways that may or may not be for them down the road. But, you know, this idea that you're going to get them and get them young is I think it's an unfair fight. It's an unfair fight. Dr. Fauci, cut 37, Dr. Fauci was on with Wolf Blitzer last night talking about the importance of wearing masks, especially during the Labor Day weekend. Cut 37.
I, unfortunate, Wolf, I'll have to say that I don't see them turning around immediately. You know, there's the immediate thing that one can do, and that is in mitigation. For example, mask wearing, particularly obviously those people who are not vaccinated should be wearing a mask. But in indoor settings, when you're in an area, which is almost the entire country, in which there's a high degree of viral dynamics, you should wear a mask. We need to do that. That's the immediate thing that one needs to do. Avoid congregate settings, particularly indoor. But in the intermediate and longer term, It's going to be vaccines that are going to solve this problem, Wolf. That's the reason why we feel so strongly we've got to get those people who have been unvaccinated to get them vaccinated. That will turn this around for sure.
Yeah.
Cheryl, welcome to the program. Hello, Cheryl.
Hi, how are you? How are you today?
I'm well,
thanks. Listen, can I finish without you interrupting me? First of all, why are we entertaining what's going on in California schools? Don't you think that the parents in California are wise enough, smart enough to handle their own school board? And also, when you do that, you put a target on teachers' backs. They are dying of COVID. They're dying. They're teaching kids in a COVID situation, pandemic situation. And you are on here blasting teachers. What's going to happen is some crazy is going to go into schools and do something stupid. I have a teacher in my family. I don't want him harmed. I don't want you doing this on the radio. You, Sean Hannity, Tucker Carlson, are the worst creatures on the planet because you incite riots. You put targets on people's backs?
No. Madam, I'm not going to permit you to lie on this program. I have not put a target on anybody's back. I happen to be married to somebody in education. You came on this program and you lied. You lied. I'm not putting a target on anybody's back. I let you speak in an unabated fashion for the better part of 55 seconds. And to be totally honest with you, I'm going to rethink whether or not I'll visit with you again because, well, the reality is I can have anybody call into the program and issue a bunch of ad hominem attacks that are baseless. I like to have a program where we have a very polite, sometimes uproarious, sometimes funny, sometimes sad conversation. And all you did was come into the room and attempt to disrupt a program that is working marvelously. Cheryl, I hope you get less angry. I hope you become less of an angry person. No doubt you're still talking into the telephone receiver, though. You're not hearing a word of this. But I'd like to let you know you can listen to it on the podcast later on today. Yeah, I don't have to sit here and take insults. I certainly can sit here and take an opposing point of view. I just had a wonderful discussion with Brian for about 3 or 4 minutes, and we totally disagreed on pretty much everything, but it was civil and polite. I would never put a target on any teacher's back. In fact, I support teachers. And here's why I support the teachers, because I believe that every good teacher that is out there is doing their best to educate children. They have a heart for this. This is a difficult job. It takes up the majority of your time. You get about 2 weeks off every year, and you factor in the teardown and the rebuild of your classroom during the summer months. You lay out hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, certainly tens of thousands of dollars over the course of a career to try to make your room work, to help your kids out who may be coming up short with supplies. But the reality is I do this program for the audience right here in Charlotte, and it is incumbent upon me to show them the respect by giving quality callers to them. Dr. John, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hello, sir. I'm glad I was able to get in with you. I just wanted to talk about what Dr. Fauci said.
Yes.
You know, he's always talking about masks and so on, but
yes.
The science doesn't really follow confirm what he says. Masks, you know, if you look at a surgical mask, that the pores in a surgical mask are 0.3 microns. The biggest virus that we know, in the coronavirus, is 0.12 microns.
Mm-hmm.
Two of those viruses could pass right through it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like putting up a chain link fence to stop a mosquito.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's so many other things also that we're finding that happened with masks and kids. Number one, they're having problems
right.
Communicating with everyone. Suicide rates have gone sky high.
Mm-hmm.
We read a report in England. How come we always hear these reports from England, Australia, Israel, from Europe, but never from over here? Is that suicide calls from teenagers has gone up 50%. You know, there was one study that was done. Well, it's not really an official study. Some parents took the masks of their kids and took them into a pathology lab.
Yes, I did that story. I did that. Yeah, I did that story. I did that story when it came out.
Why are we always hearing a one-sided story on this? We're always hearing from the CDC.
We're hearing from you. But we're hearing from you now, and you're giving your opinion. I mean, this is what talk radio is about. This is certainly not a one-direction channel here. I mean, we take calls.
Well, no, I appreciate it, but you know, you're one of the few ones that actually allows this on the phone. And talk radio is really a good outlet for this. But people need to hear about, like, from Dr. Robert Malone, who's the inventor of the mRNA technology.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying these old vaccines are not the way to go.
Well,
we're actually driving the production of the variants.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are people who are going to make their own decisions, and that's what this is really all about. Sort of, this has been the theme of the entire program. You're going to make a decision. I'm going to make a decision. We want kids to be able to get educated so that they can make their own political decisions. That's fascinating, though, what you said about the microns and the size of the mask. I'm going to find out one of these days if I ever have to go in for surgery. I'm going to ask the nurses and the doctors not to wear any masks as they work on me. I'm also going to tell them not to wash their hands or wear gloves.
Well, no.
I like to live slick and fast. Okay, wait a minute. Maybe I was too harsh on Cheryl, by the way. Because somebody just sent me a text and they said, she just put you in the same class as Hannity and Carlson. Yeah, but I sat in for Rush Limbaugh. I was a guide host. I'm next level, baby. 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. It's good to be here. Okay, I got to get your blood pressure up just a little bit. Sorry, I know I got to do this. Trust me, you'll like it. This is a revelation that came out from John Solomon. Interestingly enough, he was talking to Hannity last night. This is cut number 36. You know how Americans got left behind? Well, it turns out we shouldn't be blaming the military for Americans being left behind in Afghanistan. This is what John Solomon says based on his reporting.
The scene unfolding Saturday and Sunday while the spinsters at the Pentagon, the State Department, and the White House are saying any American who wants to come home is going to be able to come home. And meanwhile, there are Americans waving their passports. They got through the Taliban checkpoints. They're at the gate that the U.S. military controls. They're waving their passports. We are Americans. Let us in. And they were turned away. And a colonel who is witnessing this from afar in a command center says, we're bleeping leaving American citizens behind. He could not believe it. I've talked to soldiers that have talked to their friends on the front lines. The soldiers wanted to turn the key on that gate and let Americans in. The State Department and their command chain would not allow them in. And everything that was going on there debunked what the Biden administration was telling the American people on television.
How big of a deal is that? Well, let me give you a little amplification of this, okay? There's a guy by the name of, what is his name? He's the spokesperson for the State Department, Ned Price, cut 39. They asked him yesterday, this is yesterday, late in the day, like last night. They said to him, hey, how many Americans have gotten out so far since we pulled out of Afghanistan? This is his answer. Go.
Did you have a number for have any Americans gotten out since that last flight?
I don't have data to provide on that front.
Wow. I don't have any data to provide. You know what that means, right? You know what I don't have any data to provide means? It means that zero is the answer. It's 0.0. That's how many people have gotten out. Zero people have gotten out. As far as the State Department's concerned, and it was the State Department that said what they said about the Pentagon, that they were basically in charge. The Pentagon was really, let's be honest, they were providing security. And what else was the Pentagon doing? They were providing rides out on the planes. The State Department was the people that had to intervene and try to get these folks to go this way or that way. This is a disgrace. This is nuts. Congressman Brian Mast, cut 29. Congressman Brian Mast is a Republican from Florida. He lost his legs in the war on terror. He has been very, very vocal in his condemnation of the Biden administration. This is what Congressman Brian Mast says about Joe Biden talking about Afghanistan.
Every single time the administration steps up to the microphone, they are feeding us a lie. That's what they are doing. When President Biden says, let me be clear, that's an indication that he's about to tell the American people some kind of lie.
I've thought that for a while because that is almost a an involuntary mannerism with the president of the United States, where he says, you know, no joke. He'll do no joke. He'll do let me be clear. He'll do all this kind of stuff. It's really, really a troublesome way of trying to sell things. And you're noting now what it is the White House is talking about today, what it is the executive branch is talking about today. Obviously concerned with Ida and the fallout that's taken place in the last 24 hours here and up the coast, obviously, all the way to the northeast.
obviously being concerned about Ida and what happened there in the in New Orleans and Alabama and Mississippi, et cetera. Obviously being concerned about that, concerned about infrastructure, concerned about the Voting Act. But what are they also really talking about? They're going straight culture war. They're doing Texas abortion bill. That's all they're talking about. Psaki's talking about it. Biden's talking about it. That's all they want to talk about. They think pushing this war on the Texas abortion bill or whatever position they want to assert on that is, they think that is money in the bank. They don't understand that this guy is at the current guy, because he always refers to President Trump as the former guy. The current guy's got a 32% approval number. That's bad. And he's running the show. James is up next. Hello, James.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind today?
Hey, man, you're absolutely right about a culture war. That's the only play they have left in the playbook.
Yep.
I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek.
Sure.
What you just described going on in Afghanistan in the past week sounds like corruption to me.
Yeah, it sure as heck does, doesn't it? I mean, this is incredible. We're in this incredible place right now where a loss is a win and a win is a loss. And I can't for the life of me wrap my brain around that.
Yeah, you can understand why people are just so angry about everything. And that just over and over and over, you know, up is down and down is up. And there's not, you know, people feel helpless. There's anything they can do about it.
They sure do. I appreciate you checking in, James. Great call. Be safe out there. And he's right. He's 100%. James is 100% right, because people can smell when you're being dishonest. They can smell if something doesn't add up. Here, let me hearken back to a date weeks and weeks and weeks ago. Do you remember when Vice President Harris was featured as being the last person in the room with President Biden talking about the pullout from Afghanistan? And do you remember that fawning interview that Dana Bash did with her on CNN, in which she said, "Were you the last person in the room?" And Vice President Harris said, "Yep, I was the last person in the room." And he made the right call. He made the right call, and we did the right thing coming out of Afghanistan. Why have we not seen? It's a serious question. I'm not chumming for a call, but it's a serious question if you want to take a stab at it. Why do you think it is that we have not seen Vice President Harris do a press conference? If we go back to March, April, May, June of 2020, I'm talking about the big apex of the original coronavirus outbreak. If you go there, Vice President Pence was on television every single day with the president doing the coronavirus update. Are we supposed to believe that after trillions of dollars in spending on the war in Afghanistan and in other places to prosecute the war on terror, that's not as big a deal as the coronavirus? We still don't have answers from the vice president about the open border that we have. Where is the vice president? Why is she not doing interviews? The last time we heard from her, she was in Southeast Asia, and we were still in Afghanistan. Come on. I want to hear from the Veep.
News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Hour 3 underway. We got Bo Thompson coming up.
You know, I was talking to Boomer Von Cannon during the break. You know, we got five straight days of football. Is that the case, TJ? Have you checked out? We have five days of college football. That's right, college football. That's the best kind of football, in my humble opinion. I know, I love the Panthers too, but this is the best time of the year. Everybody's undefeated except Nebraska, but everybody's undefeated right now. You just get excited. You can get wings if you can find them at a store somewhere. Otherwise, good luck. You may have to get your own. Leave the pigeons alone. It's just an incredible thing. It's so great to be here with you. And I want to invite you to be a part of the discussion at 704-570-1110. Also on Twitter, at Winterble Show. That's Winter B-L-E Show. Brett with two T's. And we'll have Bo Thompson coming up later. And Mark Garrison with a preview of Charlotte at 6 as well. I want to go to a slightly different direction here, because I think this is an interesting story that isn't really political per se. But if you're on hold, stay there. Dave and David, I want you guys to stay there. I will take your call. But not to be political, there's a phenomenon that is happening in our economy right now, right? You have people that are working from home. You have people that have decided that they don't want to go back to work necessarily until that money runs out that the federal government was paying. I'm not judging. I'm just observing the way things are. But if you've been in a store, in a restaurant, you've seen shortages of goods and materials. You've also seen probably shortages of labor. You go to a store, there's a lot longer lines because there are fewer and fewer cashiers or attendants or what have you. And, you know, I was an early adopter, by the way, or an early adapter of using the self-checkouts. I love the self-checkout stuff. The only time I don't do it is if I got a full cart of groceries, because I think that's kind of rude. But that being said, there's a whole group of people that are opting out of working. You know, I tell you about the Great Reset. Do you know that there's something underway now? The Wall Street Journal had the story called The Great Resignation. What is it? Well, it's millennials leaving the workforce. No joke. This is Cut 34. This is Krithika Varagher, who's a writer for The Wall Street Journal, talking about this new phenomenon with millennials coming out of the workforce.
So it's been called the Great Resignation in terms of the number of people who are quitting their jobs. It's certainly the most in this millennium. But within that phenomenon of people leaving their jobs, I realized there are a lot of different reasons people do it. And especially for millennials who are now ages 25 to 40, a growing number of them are not jumping to a new full-time job, but just taking a break. They are saying, I don't want another full-time job right now. I want to hit pause, maybe learn some new skills, take a breather, and maybe plot a new direction in my career. So that's one phenomenon that I covered in my latest column for the Journal.
That's interesting to me that as a group of people, you have a percentage of the generation between X and Z who are just saying, you know what, I'm not doing it. Now, admittedly, when I first started hearing about this story, I was inclined to paint with a broad brush and to say, oh, here we go. Bunch of bums quitting their job, going and sleeping on mom and dad's couch. It's actually not that way at all. This is very interesting to me. They've actually kind of planned to do this. They've said, you know what, I don't know why I want to do this anymore. This is Krithika Varagher, second clip 35.
I think people are making the calculation that the benefits or the potential benefits outweigh the risks, at least in the short term. Also, I think it's relevant that the people I'm writing about aren't like Gen Zers. They're not just graduated. They're not new in the workforce. Most of them have several years of savings in the bank that factor into their decision to take a break like this. A lot of them are also still doing part-time work like bartending or freelancing. They just don't want to get locked into this other 9-to-5 job until they're really sure about the next steps. So I think, as you said, it's a perfect storm of what's in the economy right now and how the pandemic made people reevaluate how they spend their lives.
So I was just curious to know if we have a broad spectrum of audience that runs the gamut of age. And I'm just curious to know if you're one of these people that has kind of opted out and done this. I'd love to get your thoughts on this. If you want to call in today or tomorrow, we'll be doing the show again tomorrow, obviously. I'd like to get your thoughts on this, because and frankly, I sort of owe a mental apology to the millennials, because when I first started going into this story, I'm thinking, wow, you guys are like quitting and going and sleeping on your mom and dad's couch. No, they've saved money. I mean, ultimate respect in that regard. A lot of people have said that the Depression era babies and the millennials have a lot in common, that millennials tend to economize very, very well in the way that the Depression era adults had to economize, right? They're frugal. They don't spend on a lot of crazy stuff. And it's every generation gets labeled as, you know, losers by the generations before it. OK, yeah, the baby boomers and the war babies were derided as a bunch of hippies. The 70s generation was derided along with the with Gen X as a bunch of slackers, right? I was in that universe. We were like, a bunch of slackers, which I who's calling us the slackers? The boomers. Okay, whatever. And then you got you got the millennials who are derided as, you know, they just don't want to grow up, failure to launch, all that kind of stuff. And now you got Gen Z. So it's very interesting to me to see that there are people who are actually getting out of the out of the situation and saying, you know what, I want to reevaluate. I don't know that I would ever have the courage to do that unless I knew I had a lot of money, like big time dollars and cents where I didn't have to worry. Because, you know, I'm in that age bracket where I got kids in college, I got a kid in college, I got a kid on the way to college, I got this, I got that. I have a much upgraded cable package that I keep threatening to cut the cord, but I just don't trust those smart TVs sometimes. I mean, just call me a cockeyed optimist. I it's just one of those things. I just like to know that the show's really on. I don't want to know that I'm watching a show from 9 hours ago. I can't even do it 9 hours late. I got to have live. Live, and don't tell me about YouTube TV. I know about the YouTube TV. I mean, come on. Don't tell me I can get binoculars and look at my neighbor's window to see what they're watching. That's not what I'm watching. I'm watching something better, like a cooking show. 704-570-1110, Bo Thompson's next. News Talk 1110-993-WBT. Boomer Von Cannon.
Just being aware, that's all.
That's it, man.
Helping the neighborhood.
What's those night vision goggles doing from Amazon?
That's right.
News Talk 1110-993-WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Our good friend, Bo Thompson, happens to run the Bo Thompson Morning Show, joins us now. Hello, Bo Thompson.
How's it going? Hope you're well.
I'm well. I'm really excited for this upcoming college football weekend that we've got. I'm just so stoked for this, you know?
Oh, it's great. It's great for Charlotte. I mean, it's great all over the college. I mean, the NFL keeps saying this is the biggest season ever, and technically because of the number of games at it, it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just in totality, football. I mean, if you love football, I mean, this is like Christmas week starting really tonight.
Oh, without a doubt. I have a tendency to sort of compress the holiday spirit and all that sort of stuff. So once we hit Labor Day, I'm ready for Thanksgiving, and once we hit Thanksgiving, I'm ready for Christmas and then New Year's, and then I'm ready for summer. So I have three holidays in my whole world.
Well, Zoki and I were talking this morning, you know, about these games, and I'm going to have Zoki pick all of them tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like the NCAA tournament, or, you know, we always pick games when we get into the wild card stage of the NFL. You know, and they've always had, you know, the kickoff classics and these games to start off the season. But, I mean, there is a game Saturday night at Bank of America Stadium that a lot of people are calling the most important non-playoff game of the college football season.
For sure.
And, you know, it's the first one. I mean, you could essentially start talking about the playoff, rankings after Saturday night, which is crazy. You know, it's great for the people who love football and want to watch it, but if you're one of these two teams, you know, you got to make. I mean, you don't get a second chance to make a first impression, really.
Yeah, without a doubt. And all in all, it's good for us here in Charlotte, and it's a great opportunity to get back to the stuff that, you know, it's been a very heavy summer, and it's good to be able to get back to the stuff that kind of makes you smile and take your mind off of it for a minute, you know?
And I love the fact that you get a twofer. You get tonight with ECU and Appalachian State,
yep,
and then you have Saturday night, and the same thing's going on in Atlanta, kind of in reverse. You have the big game on Saturday, and then you have the undercard game on Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas tonight, you know, no disrespect to either team tonight, they have huge fan bases and it's a great game. But you know, the game that the entire country is waiting to see is Saturday night. But I like the fact that you got twofers at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium there in Atlanta, and then the B of A here tonight and Saturday. It's a great idea.
And the good thing is, you can take advantage of the West, you know, if you're that way. For example, midnight on the 5th, Sunday, midnight on the 5th, Portland State, Hawaii. So, I mean, you could be up at midnight. I have made wings at 3:42 in the morning, you know, watching Boise State or Hawaii, you know?
Of course.
You got to do it. Because you can, you got to do it. You know what I mean, Bo Thompson?
I know what you mean.
All right, so let's look at this terrible storm that just came through here, really hitting northeast of us, but really just pummeling for the last week. The story has been Ida, 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 and Ida did a ton of damage. And now there's a conversation kind of taking root here coming out of the White House where they don't want to talk about Afghanistan anymore, obviously. They want to talk about the abortion bill out of Texas, but they want to talk about infrastructure. And I would suppose that you could make a really compelling case for infrastructure in the wake of all this stuff being damaged and destroyed in the last week.
Well, I was thinking about this today. I mean, hurricanes are nothing new, and catastrophic hurricanes are nothing new,
right?
Especially coming ashore on the Gulf Coast like that. I mean, all the talk about 16 years to the day. What is happening, or seems to be happening more, and I'm not saying that it's, I'm not saying what the cause is. I'm just saying it is what it is, essentially. That you're hearing more stories about the remnants. In other words, the storm on the way out doing damage, and in this case, because of where it hit and just the unusual spot that's not ready for this kind of thing, really, you know, you're getting the front end, which is the quote-unquote traditional hurricane that we know, but now the back end, when we saw, you know, the remnants of Fred a few weeks ago, wreak havoc in western North Carolina, that, you know, the back end, as it's leaving,
yep.
I seem like we talk about that more often now than we used to, but that may just be coincidence.
True. And you know, I just in terms of the way we're going to mitigate this, I mean, I saw Al Gore put out a tweet, former Vice President Al Gore put out a tweet earlier today saying, you know, these storms are more powerful than ever, they're more devastating than ever, all this sort of stuff's got to happen. Here's where I get really worried is the fact that you've got these storms doing this damage. We've already got low supplies on stuff. We were just talking about that in the last 24 hours. This could really mess up our economy.
Well, yeah, that, I mean, and you and I were talking the other day about, and this is, I guess this is the kind of thing that we learn about down the line, but, you know, this storm hit, and we see what the damage was in Louisiana and that area of the country and the COVID problem there, and now the supply issue on top of all this. You know, it I don't mean to, you know, no pun intended, but I think by the time we look back on this and in the totality of the damage, both physical and, you know, to the economy, it's kind of like the perfect storm here.
Yeah, it really is. It's incredible. Okay, and the and finally story of the day. Mm-hmm. So you no doubt saw the story about China restricting the amount of video gaming that kids can do at 3 hours a week when you're not in school and it's a weekend or whatever it is. We've got that. Now Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party has come out and said they want to ban non-masculine appearing men from being on TV in China. What's going on? It feels like China may be running a little bit more and more towards North Koreaville or something here. It's pretty unbelievable.
Let me just say this. There have been days at my house where it might have been nice to say, well, the government says you have to stop playing video games.
That's right.
In all seriousness, I was reading this story, and I mean, the broadcasters must, quote, resolutely put an end to sissy men and other abnormal aesthetics, according to the TV regulators. And insulting a slang term, which I won't say, for effeminate men.
But, right.
This is a direct onslaught on.
You know what this means?
Sissy men.
That's right. This means WWE, WCW, Hell in a Cell, Raw. They could export all that into China now.
Well, you know, I mean, WCW and even back before that, you know, the days of the NWA, you had huge men and many times overweight men wearing what we call singlets. That's way before it was cool.
Singlets. I love that.
That's what King Kong Bundy used to wear.
That's right. I forgot about that. I'm going to go home tonight and wash mine and maybe come in with that tomorrow.
Well, the only reason I know that it's called a singlet is I used to work with a guy in a previous radio life. He was a producer on a show I worked with, and he moonlighted as a wrestler. So, he explained to me it's called a singlet.
It's called a singlet. Very nice. All right. What do we got coming up tomorrow on the Bo Thompson Show, Mr. Singlet?
Yes, hey. We have Charlotte's most beloved John Hancock back in the house tomorrow. And like I said, we'll be talking about the big college football weekend. We'll get Jim Zocchi to preview that and talk about the games. And, of course, follow up on everything happening with the remnants of Ida. It's hard to believe what we're seeing up north. But just another busy, busy week, as you know, and we'll wrap it all up.
All right, my man. Have a great night. We'll pick it up in the morning.
Absolutely.
All right, that's Bo Thompson. I'm Brett Winterville. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Now, I'm well aware that we have new listeners tuning in all the time. So I wanted to share with you, if you're new to this hour, listening to this program, a clip that should give you some hope. You know this fight about CRT that's going on around the country. We've certainly seen the coverage of it right here. Brett Jensen's done dynamite work right here in Charlotte, talking about the schools that are teaching this, though not calling it that. Well, out there on the wacky West Coast, you have a teacher who I think is on his way out of being he's on his way out. He's going to be fired. Gabriel Geip, who bragged about indoctrinating and turning students in his government class into radicals over the course of 180 days of school instruction. He bragged about it. He was caught on audio tape talking to the Project Veritas folks. And so last night, there was a big meeting that was held in Sacramento, California. This should give you hope, because remember, it's California that's looking to dump Gavin Newsom. There's a lot of activism forming out there because of the crazy radical left agenda that will inevitably come spreading across this country right to us. But one of these parents that spoke last night at the school board meeting, I think this is an incredibly instructive piece of sound, because it means that parents are starting to assert their rights. She's concerned that this guy, over the course of 13 days, Gabriel Geip, was radicalizing her daughter in a government class. He's supposed to be teaching government. He's teaching her Antifa activism. And this is what she had to say to the school board in Sacramento.
My job as her parent is to protect her from anybody that has ill will towards her. So being that this is her first year at this high school that is world-renowned and everybody knows about this school, it's so perfect and everybody does everything right, the first time my daughter tells me and she goes against my wishes to come out of a classroom that's disruptive to her well-being, I have an issue. Yes. I am very articulate. My children are very well-read. They speak their opinion. They make sure that they are clear in what they do and do not like. And for the fact that my 17-year-old daughter had to come to me and said, "Mom, you don't understand. He's let me explain. This means that in 2 weeks, in 13 days, he was allowed to change my daughter's mind about some fascist crap that y'all have let in this school." I'm from Texas. So this don't go on in Texas. This does not go on in Texas. There are 2 grades higher than California, period. So to think that my very sound-minded daughter would go against me and my wishes and our values and our home to be able to go and support this man, and he is putting her in harm's way, what the hell are y'all doing? Tired. How long does it have to go on before somebody says something?
Yes.
How long? How long? What are you going to do? That's the question. Get him out of here. We don't care about this boy. He got to go.
I mean, this is an incredible bit of activism taking place, because forever, what have you heard? Parents don't know anything. Taxpayers are wrong. You're wrong. You can't have an opinion. We got to shut you down. It's got to be over. You got to all that sort of stuff, right? All that sort of stuff. That's what you've been hearing. That's what you've been hearing. You shut up and sit down. We're the experts. We'll teach your kids. You're just a bunch of out of touch fuddy duddies. No. Parents are getting activated in this regard. And this guy, Gabriel Geip, he's merely the latest exhibit and example of this kind of stuff. But the fact of the matter is, people have said, okay, you know what? I'm going to go and have a say about what my kids are learning in class, what my kids are learning in school. I'm going to go stand up for them. Now, what this woman needs to do, and what the other moms that are here at this meeting and the dads that are there at that meeting need to do, is go run for school board. Go run for the school board. You are seeing pushback like you've never seen before. And I think what we're now looking at with people, and what's starting to really kind of make sense about things, is that folks understand that it's up to them to save themselves. It's not a selfish move. It's up to us to save us. It's up to them to save them. It's not
somebody's not going to come in and save you from out of town. You're in charge of your local school district. You're the taxpayer. You get to come and have an opinion. And if they don't want to hear from you, well, then so be it. Then you could run against them. But there is nobody is coming to fly in from out of town to save us. Save you, save us, save whatever. And it's up to us to demand accountability from people who are supposed to be held to account. One of the parents, I didn't pull her clip, but one of the parents made a very interesting point, and she threw a little shade at the school board when she said, "You have no idea how much we learned last year with the virtual classes." And then she paused for a moment and she effectively said, "Oh no, we learned a lot because we listened to the lessons. We heard what these teachers were telling our kids, thinking that we weren't paying any attention and that we weren't here. And now that they're in the classroom, now we really don't have any access to what's being said except for what the kids tell us." That's a big reveal. That is a big reveal. It also showed you how comfortable these ideologues were in that room to basically just talk about how, well, you got to get more radicalized, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. How about getting more informed? Is that an option on the table? There he is, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, here he is.
The man, the legend.
The myth.
The myth. Keep throwing, you'll miss it.
So I was just wondering if Tim Moore thinks that Pete Callender is a fine American, what does he think about you?
Boy, that's a good question. I don't know. Well, I haven't gone at him yet.
Yeah. All right. That was kind of a little sloppy love fest between those two, wasn't it?
We'll leave that there. To be continued.
That's right.
Thanks for joining us, Mark Garrison.
Yes, sir.
It's wonderful to have you on. Have a nice day. No. What do we got coming up on Charlotte at 6?
Well, 6:05, local hospitals today had a press conference hoping to use a little fear to get people to get the COVID shot, mm-hmm. saying hospital beds are hard to get. How hard are they to get?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't tell us that.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Charlotte police say, yes, it is frightening, but they don't think you need to be afraid to drive on the interstates after that terrible road rage murder over the weekend.
Horrible.
It really is. Guy killed after making a move that annoyed another driver on the interstate. We did learn today that a lot of people saw what happened, pulled over, called 911, and gave the cops a really good description of the killer's car. Yeah.
Remember in the early part of the summer, we saw that family was shot at, and the mom lost her life going out on 95.
Going to the beach.
That's right.
That's exactly right. Wow. Dirty Restaurant Thursday at 6:35.
Mm-hmm.
South Charlotte restaurant with a manager clueless about food safety, but told the inspector, "Well, I do need to take the class."
No, really?
Yeah.
That's check if he's got a driver's license too. Oh, so this sounds like this is a big time show tonight.
Absolutely. Oh, every night. What are you talking about?
Yeah, every single night. You know what? Yeah. I just got a text message from a high ranking government official who says Mark Garrison is a fine American.
Was he in prison or is he out on parole?
No.
Oh, okay.
Oh, this is going to be spicy, Mark Garrison, tonight. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, man.
All right, my man. That's Mark Garrison, Charlotte at 6. Tune in. I'm going to be listening. The idea that you would admit that you would cop to the manager, I got to take that class. Yeah, I've been missing it lately. Jim. Is this Jim? Go ahead, Jim.
Yes, this is Jim on with Mark Garrison. How about that?
Well, that was Mark Garrison. That's now just Brett Witterbull. What's going on?
Oh, he's left? Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I called you yesterday about the story about the misinformation hearing that Nathan Fletcher and the Board of Supervisors were having the purpose of it is to keep people from spreading misinformation about COVID and to make a ramification. It was a resolution that he introduced, and there was so many people at the meeting, it turned into a 15-hour meeting, that there were so many people that wanted to speak out against him and his resolution that all the people at the meeting vowed to not vote for him again if he passed the resolution. At 3 a.m, they went ahead and passed the resolution.
Whoa,
No, nothing. Look. Oh, 3 a.m. It happened at 3 a.m. Nothing good happens at 3 a.m. except babies getting born. Or the other end of that deal. I mean, you can't, no, come on now. What's going on? It's 3 a.m. You can't be doing government work at 3 a.m. I mean, the absolute latest, if you're going to do like administrative stuff, the latest, I'm thinking I'll go 12:30. But you get 3 a.m, that's just, what you know what that is? That's abusive. And this guy, not Jim, the guy he's talking about, is just representative of the entitled class of people. And you know what I'm talking about, folks. You know these people that are in government or in administration of a department or at an institution. And they are just entitled. They will tell you how important they are, even if you don't ask them to. They'll walk around, flying around, flipping and flapping around. And the fact of the matter is, yes, they're very important people. I have found the single best bit of advice that I ever got in my business life was, number one, go in early, go out late, because you always get access to people whom you otherwise might not have access to, because assistants, executive assistants, secretaries, what have you, are not there acting as gatekeepers. So if you go in early and or you stay late, you will get access to people who otherwise wouldn't be there. The other thing I learned very early on is, if you have anybody try to tell you how important somebody is about themselves, well, I'll have you know that I'm the guy in charge of the thing that's in charge of the thing. They're really not that important, because you just know who the important people are, and you know who the significant people are. And the idea that some guy who has achieved literally nothing in his life decides he's going to take on, quote, misinformation in the public space, it just tells you everything you got to know about a guy like that. You know, somebody of a certain age will understand it's Frank Burns syndrome. You know, and that's what it is. It's these people that walk around thinking like that they're super. OK, I'll go older than that. I'll go Niedermeyer syndrome from Animal House. I mean, that's it. These are the people you don't need in your life. But a lot of these people are those gatekeepers that don't want you going to the school board meeting, to the community meeting, to the town meeting, to the city council meeting, to the county commissioner meeting. And that's why you need to just go down there and be involved. In fact, I would consider it a high honor if, when you do go there and get involved, and once you've gone a couple of times and you've made really, really good points, you'll know you've done it when they get that look in their eye. That look in their, oh, nice, Brett. What are you talking about? Are you saying that you want to intimidate public servants? No, 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 no. You do not. You don't have to threaten or do any of that. All you have to do is come in, make your case in a civil and smart manner. No yelling, no screaming, no carrying on, no, none of that. Just make your case in the appropriate way. And what you will see after 2 or 3 visits and being consistent in your argumentation, you will not see the look of fear in their eyes. You will see something far more rare, the look of accountability. Bureaucrats and self-important types desperately fear the look of accountability, because it means you know what they're up to. Thank you to TJ and Josh and Mark and Bo and Brett and Boomer and Anna and each and every one of you. We'll do it again tomorrow starting at 3. News Talk 1110 993 WBT.